T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
All right, welcome back. Second hour of the show. I do have a conversation with Dr. Garza coming up this afternoon because we do, and I pointed this out yesterday. Look, I think some of the numbers, the ICU numbers, the vent numbers, not as bad as they were earlier in the pandemic, but the hospitalizations and the admissions are up. And it's with younger people, but we'll kind of talk through that here and some of the nuance with Dr. Garza a little bit later. We have an off day for the World Series, and it's a split right now. Tampa Bay won last night. I think a lot of people were all on board with the Dodgers, of course, winning that first game. Steve Futterman is with us. He's down at the World Series covering this strange shortened baseball season. Futterman, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm going to make St. Louis Cardinal fans right off the bat feel very good. So I was at game one on Tuesday night and was roaming around very carefully with my mask and trying to be 6 feet away, socially distanced from people. But I did have to interview some fans, and I ran into some Texas Ranger fans. And I brought up a very sore subject for them, but a very happy subject for Cardinal fans. Game 6 of the Cardinals-Rangers World Series, this gentleman was there. That was the game where the Rangers were one strike away from winning the World Series. Not once, but twice, the Cardinals came back. They won Game 6, and of course, they won Game 7. So trying to make Cardinal fans feel good right off the bat.
Hey, we appreciate that. You know, we're next year is going to be a pretty big year because, and hopefully we'll have fans in the stands because I think this is not going to be as much fun, but we'll be on the 10th anniversary of that next year. And even on Facebook memories this week, because this is the time that that series was taking place, I'm getting pictures. I think last night was the night that Albert hit 3 home runs. So yep. It's been fun. But look, this World Series, it's interesting, Steve, because I go to some of the, even the LA Times yesterday morning after game one, this is why the Dodgers are going to win this World Series. You know, they're going to dominate.
Friend Bill Plaschke, my friend Bill Plaschke, game one, it's all over. Listen, it might be. I do think on paper the Dodgers look oh so good. And, you know, I think it's well known. I'm not a big Dodger fan, but you have to face reality. I think they look very good, but everyone who really knows baseball, and that sadly doesn't include me, they keep telling me, do not discount this Rays team. They may not be household names, but they are good, and they looked very good last night.
Yeah, so it's an interesting series also for St. Louis because of Randy Arozarena and even a couple other you know, former St. Louis Cardinals, and that guy is just unbelievable. And you just, you know, even though it stings a little bit, we got a really good pitcher in exchange, Matthew Liberatore, and we're probably going to see him, Steve, in the big club hopefully next year. He's going to compete in the spring, and I think he's going to be a great pickup. But, you know, it's kind of fun outside of the sting to see a guy take bloom like this. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, he is excellent. I mean, he is such an important cog in this Rays machine that he seems to have sort of an aura to him as well. He's just an exciting person to watch. I really enjoy him. He happens to be my favorite Ray player right now.
So what's it like with the whole atmosphere and the fans? There are some fans, and you can hear them. It's nice to have some fans. So what's that all like?
It is interesting. And by the way, they do pipe in some additional sound, and they make it very clear before the game on the scoreboard, the big video board. It's a beautiful brand new stadium, by the way. They make it very clear there will be some additional sound enhancements over the PA system. So they're very upfront about it. They seem to be, and I'll note more in Game 3, they seem to be playing lots of the sounds that you hear at Dodger Stadium. These first two games were Dodger home games. So I think you'll hear some of the effects become different in Games 3, 4, and 5, because those would be the games at Tampa Bay Tropicana Field. So that's interesting. I also compared it last night because I was trying to figure out what does this atmosphere remind me of. It reminded me a bit of like an Olympic Games when you go, let's say, to London and you're watching a big match between, in basketball, between the U.S. and Spain. Now, obviously, the stands are filled then, but you have people loud cheering going on when Spain makes a basket and the U.S. makes a basket. So last night when the Rays were scoring, there were very clear cheers for the Rays when they would score. And then when the Dodgers came back, there were clearly loud cheers when the Dodgers scored. There seems to be more fans for the Dodgers than the Rays, but both fans have significant audio approvals when those teams do well.
Well, it's been a fun shortened season. You know, one of the questions that we all sort of tackled at the beginning of July, you know, as we were heading into official baseball is, look, you know, I think a lot of people thought, is this going to work? And then the Cardinals get COVID and like, I even tweeted, okay, farewell baseball. I think they deserve a lot of credit for getting into the postseason, being in a bubble, doing it this way. And I don't think, you know, the question that I was going to get to is that people were saying, is this going to be a legitimate World Series or is it going to be an asterisk? This is a legitimate World Series to me.
I don't know because the season was so short. You know, the NBA, NHL, they played seven eighths, almost the entire season. Baseball, which is a long season, 162 games, is that what it is? And they played 60 games. Yeah, I don't know. But you know what? It is what it is. This will be a World Series for 2020. Is it comparable to other World Series? No, but it's a different kind of World Series. It's going to count. If the Dodgers finally win their long drought going back to 1988, Kurt Gibson, that will come to an end. If the Rays win, it will be their first World Series championships. So it will count, but I do think, I don't know if you put an asterisk by it, but it is a different kind of championship, and that's just the way it is.
Steve Futterman down at the World Series in Texas. Enjoy the, we got an off day today, and then back at it this weekend, Steve. And I'm heading out to Las Vegas. So we were supposed to rendezvous there in February. We'll have to do it another time.
Yeah, post-COVID-19, unfortunately. It'll have to wait a while. I'm on debate duty tonight. I'm going from baseball to debates tonight. So this will be interesting this evening, the final debate.
Well, there's some similarities there in competition. Steve Futterman from CBS News. Always great to have you on, Steve. Have a great weekend.
Take care, Mark. You too.
312. I always like chatting it up with Futterman, and he gets some cool assignments. There's no doubt about that. We'll take a break. Dr. Garza is going to join me. Look, I like to have a conversation with him every 3 weeks. I like to track these numbers, kind of see where we are. And I will tell you that, and I've been honest about when we're sort of on the red line and when we're not. I see the potential red line with admissions for sure, even though ICU and ventilators are down. And I think Dr. Garza might explain that here in a couple of minutes. But my fear is you don't want to overwhelm the healthcare system. And this is why I don't want to overwhelm the healthcare system, because of the healthcare workers and because Sam Page, Lida Krusen, and everyone else that has control of things like this outside of Governor Parson will definitely put in more restrictions. If the pattern that we're seeing right now in St. Louis continues in St. Louis County, I'm not saying this is what they should do. Excuse me. I'm just saying this is what they will do. There is no doubt. And then you're back to school at home, right? We don't want that. We don't want that. Try to be safe. 313, Dr. Garza coming up next.
The Mark Reardon Show, sponsored by Cantor Injury Law on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
In case you missed the show from the top at 2 o'clock, I did see Borat. I watched it last night. My friend Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com also saw it, and we have some thoughts. We'll kind of talk about the Rudy Giuliani scene. No spoilers. Well, maybe some spoilers, but we'll get to that here in the next segment on KMOX. We have Dr. Alexander Garza with us. Of course, he heads the St. Louis Metropolitan Regional Pandemic Task Force, also Chief Medical Officer for SSM Health St. Louis and former Chief Medical Officer for Homeland Security. He's with us on the Quiver River Electric guest line this afternoon. Dr. Garza, always appreciate when you come back on. I know how busy you are. How are you?
I'm I'm doing okay. A little worried, but doing okay.
Yeah. I can hear, I can sometimes when we play the briefings and when I see the numbers, I can kind of hear it in your voice. So let's basically set the landscape right now because, and I look at these numbers all the time, certainly not as much as you, but we're clearly in a situation right now where, and you're going to have to tell me if ventilators in ICU are the same, but the admissions and the hospitalizations are definitely up, right?
Right. Yes, they are. No, we're on an accelerated growth path with the admissions and the hospitalizations. I've spoken a little bit in the past about how the percentage of patients coming into the hospital that we saw going to the ICU and be put on ventilators early on in the pandemic is much different than it is now. And that's because we've learned a lot over the course of the pandemic, and it's a little bit different of a patient group. They're a little bit younger. Not quite as sick, but still it's concerning when, taking up a lot of patient beds and consuming creating a lot of work for the workforce and all the other things that come with it.
One of the things you said the other day, I want to emphasize just a little bit, because I had a bit of a personal experience with a very close friend of mine out in Maryland, whose son needed surgery in the spring and could not find a bed for a while. And you mentioned this, I think, in the briefing on Monday, is that one thing people do need to consider, no matter what you think about what's happening with COVID, is if the admissions go up, if you need some elective surgery, you might not be able to get that if things get worse, right?
Right. No, that's absolutely correct. And we're starting those discussions right now. At what point do we start dialing back those elective procedures? And those are all things that are designed, or some of them are designed, to be preventative care, whether it's a colonoscopy to look for GI cancer or any of a number of other procedures that we would do for preventative care. And so we know that when we have to have beds for COVID patients, that takes away from beds for other types of patients. And one other thing along with that, Mark, and I'm sure you picked up on this too, but when we start getting to excess levels of patients in our hospitals, that really increases sort of the mental load on the workforce as well. And there's plenty of studies that have shown that once you start overwhelming sort of that capacity for the workers to be concentrating on their job, that quality and safety go down. And so, again, even if regardless of what your opinion is on COVID, when our workforce is overstressed, overtaxed, that means the quality goes down for everybody, not just for COVID patients. And that's not a place that we want to be.
Did you see there was a real interesting story that was in the New York Times yesterday? And the question that was posed is, where have all the patients gone? Where have all the hospital patients gone? And it basically focused on a situation in hospitals, except in areas maybe like St. Louis, where COVID is surging. There are no lines of patients in the hospital halls. In other words, they would more before the pandemic, they would see people coming in saying, I got chest pain, I have this, I have that. And they would go to the hospital. And then some guy, they tell the story of a guy who comes in, he's in his 60s, and he had chest pressure for a week, but he didn't want to come in because he was afraid of getting the coronavirus. Do you see anything like that happens?
Well, we saw that earlier in the pandemic. So this is just my thought on that. So we weren't seeing as many patients coming in for things that we would expect them to. So just what you were talking about, people coming in with chest pain or stroke-like symptoms or something like that. And so when we compared our numbers, we were clearly down in the number of people that come in for heart attacks earlier on. Now, I think some of that and the preventive things have probably picked up now, because the volumes that we're seeing in the hospitals right now is primarily mostly medical surgical patients, non-COVID. And so we think that deferred care that happened in the spring has caught up with people now. Either it's, manifested itself by, hey, now it really is serious, or people are saying, I have to, get this test done or this service done. But then when you layer on top of that the COVID patients that are surging now, it's just, it's unsustainable.
Where do you think, you know, I think one of the things I've been a little annoyed with is I think there are some positive things that have happened, including with schools around the country and here in St. Louis. So I think that's a good thing. We've seen the success of sports, Major League Baseball. We're in the World Series. I would have, I'm a bad gambler anyway, but I would have lost my bet. I thought baseball was, first of all, I thought baseball wasn't going to happen. And then when the Cardinals, you know, had their incident, I thought, well, that's it. So we've had good things that have happened. We've kept some of the, you know, the outbreaks in check. But when it comes to, look, we've been told, and this is what's happening right now, the weather's getting cooler, we had crappy weather this week, and people are indoors more often. Is that what's happening? Right. It's spreading because you're in bigger groups indoors?
Well, so you always have to consider the incubation period as well. And so what we're seeing right now is really the result of what happened, you know, 2 weeks ago. And so we, didn't have poor weather 2 weeks ago. So what that tells me then is that we had an excess amount of virus circulating in the community, or maybe not excess, but a lot. And it's finally caught up to a certain level where now it's started to impact people coming to the hospitals and requiring health care because they're getting sick. And so more, I mean, it's just math, really. More people that are transmitting the virus out in the community means it's going to affect more people that are at risk for coming to the hospital, and that translates into more hospitalizations. Now, I think your question, though, of is it the cooler weather and people going indoors, that's what we're concerned about. So in the very beginning when you were saying, how are you doing? I said, I'm very concerned, and that's exactly because of that. We have a large amount of virus, and now we're all moving indoors, so we don't get the benefit of what we had before of being able to be outside.
You know, I think a lot of people feel pretty comfortable moving in and out of convenience stores and maybe safely at restaurants, but I'm not comfortable with groups of certainly more than 10 people because I think that's really, and look, we're seeing, I told this story, I'm heading out of town, my friend called me, I'll just toss this out to you. So he calls me, he says, look, effort of full disclosure, my housekeeper has COVID, I haven't seen her since the 7th, so that's 14 days, so I'm assuming that I'm safe. But you have families also that, you know, some people, we've seen this in Miami and other cities too, where people are sometimes living on top of one another, and you know, that's where this can get really, really spread quickly in situations like that.
Yeah, population density does play a factor in how fast it can spread. And the other thing that just came out yesterday from the CDC was also defining what a contact is now. And so it went from 6 feet, within 6 feet for 15 minutes of continuous time to 15 minutes of any time within the past 24 hours. And so what that tells me is that there are cases out there that don't meet the classic contact definition that the CDC had set earlier. So it could be much less than 15 minutes of exposure time in order to transmit the virus. And so, you know, what does that mean for the population? Well, now we have a bigger pool of people that are now going to fit the quarantine isolation guidelines from the CDC. And so that's going to be challenging as well for our public health partners and for schools and for workplace. It's a serious turn.
So if somebody does come, you know, let's say you have someone and they find out, they're working with somebody, and then they find out that the person they're working with has someone else in their family that tested positive for COVID. How do you handle that situation? What's the best path there?
Yeah.
You know, because you just don't know how much contact there's been.
Right. Yeah, it's really hard to sort of extrapolate that out to like that second and third order, you know. And so there are really no guidelines for being a contact to a contact, right, until somebody has a definitive diagnosis of COVID or becomes symptomatic. And so that's really when you start looking through that contact tracing. For practical purposes, I mean, it's really hard to offer guidance for that because you just never know if that first level contact is going to become infective or not. I mean, otherwise you could go crazy with the amount of people that, you know, have been potentially exposed to the virus.
Right. I mean, it gets tricky. Dr. Alexander Garza, I appreciate it. I know how busy you are. You're always very nice to us and squeeze us in. So thank you so much.
Anytime. Okay. Have a good day.
328. By the way, we had some COVID news that sort of broke in the NFL this afternoon. I wasn't going to go to the game because they don't have folks at the game, but I'm going to Las Vegas this weekend, and the Buccaneers and Raiders were supposed to play on Sunday Night Football. They have changed that. They're going to move. Let's see what they do. They're going to move this game out of an abundance of caution to ensure that a game would be available for fans on Sunday night. So they've actually moved that. I'm still confused. They moved it to Sunday afternoon, and then they moved the Seahawks-Cardinals games to Sunday night. I guess they're planning on the game. This is where it gets confusing. They still think the Buccaneers-Raiders game is going to be played, but it seems like they're hedging a little bit because they think it might also get canceled. That's why they moved the Seahawks-Cardinals, a much less interesting game, to Sunday night. Anyway, 329. When we come back, my friend Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com, we've both seen the new Borat movie. We've both seen the scene with Rudy Giuliani that's in question and controversial. We'll give you some perspective without too many spoilers. Coming up next on KMOX.
This is Kevin Wheeler. Stay tuned this week as we look at five key storylines that will impact the upcoming Cardinals offseason. From veterans hitting free agency to the search for more offensive production. We'll have it all right here on your home for the Cardinals, KMOX.
Hey, just a quick moldy pot update this afternoon. Our executive producer from the morning, Chris Myhill, tweeted out yesterday, I think Moldy Pot was my band name in college. And I told you this yesterday, and I always have to say the effort of full disclosure. My wife works, she runs the marketing for the dispensaries that are open on Manchester Road and Bliss. And there was this claim by this customer that bought some weed over the weekend, that there was mold in it. Bud rot is what it's called. There wasn't any. And I told you this yesterday. It was very suspicious from the
get-go. You are fake news.
The Post has the story. It is fake news. They tested it. They tested it again. There's nothing in there. My question is, and our local paper just did an update on this, I would look into the guy who claimed this, because who does that? Who calls the state if something's wrong with their weed? Why not take it back? The whole thing was very, very suspicious. And there's no moldy pot. But it was fun to talk about it, I guess, for a couple of days. 338, something else we're going to talk about here this afternoon. It was uncomfortable. I got a little queasy. I laughed my ass off. I'm just going to admit that. I watched Borat's subsequent movie film last night.
What is the problem, officer?
Got somebody that's strapped to the top of your car. He's in that passenger seat, boss.
Only men and bears are allowed inside car.
It is called, like, the name of the movie is Borat subsequent movie film. And Christian Toto is with me this afternoon from HollywoodandToto.com. He's also seen it. I don't know if your humor is as sick as mine, so you may have a different take on this film, Christian. How are you?
I'm good. I think the movie actually peaked with the title.
So you didn't like it at all.
The title was great, but the rest of it, not so good.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say. My wife told me last night after we watched, she goes, you better not tell anyone to see this movie. So I'm going to start with that, because if you enter into territory like this with Sacha Baron Cohen, and maybe you're not familiar with the first film, or you don't know his style of movie making or brand of humor, don't write me an email and claim that I told you to see it, because my wife told you not to see it. However, we'll get to the Giuliani stuff here in a second.
Sure.
Some of it is uncomfortable, but I support Sacha Baron Cohen in the same way that I support Louis C.K. or Bill Burr or anyone else out there that wants to do cutting edge comedy. I don't have to watch it. You know, it's my choice. And I certainly could go in another direction with comedy, but I'm fine with him doing something along these lines. Do you have an issue with that?
Oh, gosh, no. I loved Borat, the original film from 2006. Might be top 10 comedy of all time for me. Loved it.
Wow.
I thought it was irreverent, bracing, different, edgy, crazy, off the wall, and just hilarious. So when I approached this movie, I thought, it's a sequel. It's about 12, 14 years later. It seemed like a bad idea. It just seemed like one of those lightning in a bottle moments. And I thought the beginning was actually pretty funny. I got a bunch of laughs out of it. You know, certainly it's very far left as far as it's the themes and the targets it hits at times.
Right.
But, you know, I don't care. Just make it funny. And I thought that the concept started strong and then really went nowhere. There's basically a running joke about how people in his country treat women as third, fourth, fifth class citizens, which I didn't think it was really funny the first 16 times. And I certainly was bored by the 88th time.
Yeah.
And without
you did go to the well on that one quite a bit.
There.
Right. So basically the storyline is that Borat has to redeem himself in the eyes of his country's premier because he brought shame on, you know, Kazakhstan with the original film. So the plan is, here's what they want to do. They want, he's got a daughter. He's not real fond of the daughter, but he's got a teenage daughter, Tutar, played by an unknown actress named Maria Bakalova, who, by the way, is 24 in real life, and we'll get to that in a second. She's from Bulgaria. So they want someone to marry her from the inner circle, and they can't get to Pence, and they can't get to Trump, and they think, oh, you know what, who's a good choice? Rudy Giuliani. So that's sort of the way that they frame the movie. They try to find Rudy Giuliani. So then let's get to this part here, Christian, without ruining the movie for people, because obviously this made a big splash this week with controversy. And what I said this morning, and we'll see if you agree, in my opinion, this is an uncomfortable scene to watch. He comes off as a dirty old man, but I think he was trying to tuck his shirt in his pants on the bed, as weird as it was, and not touch his tubing. Do you disagree with that or agree?
You know, I think we need more information. I think what he basically said, Giuliani, was that when you do these events, you have to kind of mic up, which means you have a lavalier mic with a cord that kind of spools under your shirt.
Goes down your shirt.
Your neck
right.
area. No, I've done that a few times. You've probably done it many more than I have. And it's very certainly possible. But listen, when you watch the whole movie, what you get is that, listen, you know, like the late night shows and the daily shows, things like that, they do extreme editing to kind of get the message they want. And it's very clear there's a lot of extreme editing in the new Borat where they're trying to send a message where even if they didn't get the gotcha moment, they had to at least come close to making you think they got the gotcha moment. And so this just seemed kind of pathetic to me. And you know, the Giuliani exchange with the young woman, he's either trying to be nice to her because she comes off as a moron and she's, you know, very sort of vulnerable and very silly and very inexperienced, or he's flirting with her. This woman being very sweet to him, and he's an older dude and he's getting flattered by a young woman. It's a little creepy for sure, but
yeah, right.
You know, if I'm in my 70s and this young woman is talking to me and she's being very deferential to me, I'm going to guess I might flirt back or something. So that's not a big deal to me. I think that's still legal.
Okay, but here, this is what's interesting. And I tend to agree with that. And I did say in my tweet, I said, look, it's consensual. And he appears to be kind of tucking in his shirt. It is weird. It's a weird scene. But somebody responded to me. I won't identify the person. It's a national sports correspondent, we'll just say that, who took issue with my tweet and then sent me a text and said this, because they thought that I was being too easy on Giuliani just by saying he didn't touch his tubing. By the way, I like using that phrase right now. This was the response. It was kind of harsh. Giuliani is a blanking blank hole, and he would totally go forward if he had the chance, even if she knew she was 15. Now, this is where I had to basically stop him, and I say, look, and then he said, I've read a couple of articles in which he was very touchy and forward with her, even as the fact that she was 15 was mentioned. Well, I said, the difference is I've seen it. The rest of America hasn't. You've seen it, Christian. He's a creep. No argument there. But I call him like I see him. And Maria Bakalova, as I mentioned, is 24 years old. She doesn't look, I don't think, close to 15 by the end of this movie. And in fact, I'm not 100% positive, but in my viewing of the movie, there was zero mention of her age to Rudy Giuliani before Sacha Baron Cohen jumps in. Was there?
Zero. Zero.
Yeah.
And if you look at this woman, she doesn't look 15. She doesn't look 16. She doesn't look 18.
No,
She's set up to be an interviewer. And even though listen, there are people who are young, when I was young, I wasn't a polished interviewer. So she was a clumsy, fawning interviewer. That was the shtick that they set in motion. Listen, you know, there's other scenes in the movie where Sacha Baron dresses up as a KKK member and enters CPAC, and it's edited so aggressively with little reaction shots, it seems utterly false. And again, this is a comedy. It's not meant to bring down dictators. It's meant to make us laugh. I didn't think it did. You thought it did more than I did. That's fine. But we're trying to kind of latch onto this as this, we got to bring down Giuliani. There's no there. Unless we have more specific information. And it sounds like when he shot this particular incident, I think he called the police or he blew the whistle on it or he realized it was a whole bunch of nonsense. There's a whole fake narrative going on that the entertainment media quickly glommed onto, and now I think they're backpedaling.
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing here.
That's
Let's talk about it as a movie.
Right. that's why I wanted to wait until I saw it to weigh in. And that's why I'm encouraging people, if they want to see it, to weigh in. Because I think there is, you got to give them credit, though. It's a brilliant publicity stunt for the movie. I mean, come on. They knew what they were doing. They kind of kept Giuliani out of some of the earlier clips. We remembered, like you said, he did call the police when this happened. But it's an embarrassing scene. But to me, if you didn't have any mention of the whole thing with her being 15, you wouldn't even think of that before the end of the movie. And you'd have to see it to understand what I'm saying. But I did. I liked it more than you did because it made me laugh. There are some scenes that are, I mean, suffice it to say, this is what he does. Way, way gross, over the top. So again,
nice.
Yeah, you know, Dave Klein's going to watch it because he's sick like I am. He has a sick, twisted mind, and I appreciate that. But if you don't have a sick, twisted mind and you're a normal person, you probably want to avoid it. I always think of my mom, Christian, when I think about this. I think about my mother sitting down to try to watch Borat and the subsequent sequel, and I thought, wow, she would, especially the debutante ball scene. I'll just leave it at that.
That's a funny scene. Listen,
well, see,
be outrageous,
that's what I'm
everyone.
Talking about.
It's okay. There are G-rated comedies.
You like...
There are hard R-rated comedies. This is hard R-rated comedy. And when it works, it works. For me, I thought the second half of the movie was laugh-free.
Great success.
Anything else on your... By the way, anything else on your radar entertainment-wise right now?
Oh, gosh. You know, I just did an interview with Nick DiPaolo, a conservative comedian who was banned from YouTube for a week. I bang this drum and no one cares, but I really wish that Hollywood entertainers who are very vocal and very political would start speaking up for free speech and against big tech. We need their voices. You know, their voices often don't matter in certain arenas, but they're artists and I want them to speak out and they're not. And I'm so angry about it.
Well, we got a senator here in Missouri that's taking the charge on that. Senator Josh Hawley, Christian Toto, HollywoodInToto.com. Great to hook up. We'll talk soon, Christian. I appreciate it.
Very nice.
There you go, kind of a mixed review. Very nice, very nice. My wife, you know, mixed review there of Borat. I don't think it was as good as the first one, although I haven't seen the first one in a long time. I actually had someone who just texted me and said, I'm confused. Is that movie a spoof? Yeah, the whole character is a spoof. I guess I'm operating under the assumption that people remember this movie from 14 years ago. Yes, that's what he does. He creates characters like Bruno, too. Total Information PM is coming up at 4 o'clock.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Yeah, cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. I wanted to make it musical this afternoon. I haven't watched it last night. Bruce Springsteen was on Stephen Colbert. I don't like Stephen Colbert that much. He does too much politics. I'm told they didn't do any politics. And if you would have asked me in 1990, at the end of the 80s, if I could meet one person, who would it be? I would have told you either Ronald Reagan or Bruce Springsteen. I actually sat next to Bruce Springsteen in a movie that very year. I never met Ronald Reagan before he passed away. But the E Street Band has been an important part of my life for 40 years now, more than 40 years. And this movie, and as far as I can tell, this album, Letter to You, is devoid of politics. And the documentary is going to be out tomorrow on Apple TV Plus. And it's amazing. Tom Zimney shot this. And what you see here in black and white is you see Bruce and the E Street Band creating this record. Dave, go to Ghost right now, because I love this song. This movie and this record is not filled with politics. It's filled with love, friendship, family, dreams, passion, and quite candidly, far too much confronting of mortality from 71-year-old Bruce Springsteen. I saw this movie in my basement a week ago, and I wept openly for 90 minutes. I really did. It was very emotional, and it literally might kill Bruce Springsteen if he can't perform these songs live soon. But in the meantime, this serves as a perfect placeholder for that big tour to come, and I'm putting this down. I'm going in early here. This is risky. This record, Letter to You, best record since Tunnel of Love. In 1988. Total Information PM is coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!